listener production.
It's not about being a massive tight ass, living in a tent, eating rice and beans. It's about making choices and decisions that enrich you financially, but also enrich you from like a life point of view. And I think that's my take on what the FIRE movement is about. It's a life philosophy on how to live a better life that just so happens to master your money along the way.
G'day, I'm Scott Phillips, the Motley Fool's Chief Investment Officer, and welcome to another episode of The Good Oil. Now, you've heard this before, unless you're new here, in which case I will tell you for the first time, the good oil is the good stuff, the important stuff, and the real stuff. That's what it means to give someone the good oil, and that's what we try and do every time we have an episode of this podcast. We bring you conversations with entrepreneurs, executives, and experts, the people who know what's going on, and the people who make things happen. Today's guest, as always, is someone who knows what's going on, someone who's making it happen, both for himself and for a growing community, of which he is a very, very important member. Most people know him as Aussie Firebug. I know him as Matt. Matt, welcome to The Good Oil.
It's a pleasure to be here, Scott. Very excited to be on the show.
I'm going to stop us and just get you to define the terms just really specifically for us. And I know, to your point, different terms have different meanings for different people. So there is no single definition. But if I was gonna Google what is FIRE, or I jumped on your blog, and I'm sure there's a foundational post somewhere or a range of them that says this is the seminal Matt's seminal view on what FIRE means to me or means to the community, and they're often two different things as you've already talked about. I'll talk about your evolution in a minute, but can we just start with just really as close to bare bones as we can? Generally, except you mentioned the 4% rule. So just can you explain to me, if I was going to say, Matt, I want to start FIRE today. Or maybe not even you personally, because your views have changed. But if I said, you know, what does the community consider FIRE? What would I have to do? What would I choose to do to kind of really embrace that lifestyle?
Sure. Generally speaking, the financial independence part, generally speaking, most people go off the 4% rule. So if you want to go technical, if you've reached FIRE, if your expenses are 4% or less than your portfolio, like if you're spending $50,000 a year, you've got to have $1.25 million in investments, right, to generate that $50,000. And that factors in the inflation and the tax with it. The retire early part, though, is unfortunately, and this sounds a bit of a cop-out, there is no generally accepted interpretation of retire early. It's different for everyone. My interpretation, like I said, is simply retiring from the rat race. So if you've reached financial independence and you go do something that earns $300,000 a year, but you're doing it actually because you like to do it. And that's the differentiator in my head, that like, if you're doing it for the money, okay, you're not really living like the FIRE lifestyle, but if you're doing it because you want to, it brings meaning, you find value in the work, you know, then have at it. Like there is no hard and fast rule. I mean, even Mr. Money Moustache himself, when he reached financial independence, he started a building company because he wanted to do carpentry. He was a software engineer, but he really loved building stuff with his hands. So he started a building company. And like people will say, oh, he's not really retired then. It's like, yeah, if you want to go, technically speaking, yes, but you've got to understand that the word, like within the community, it means something different. It means that you're running your own race. You're marching to the beat of your own drum. And that's what he did. And that's what I really... That's my interpretation of the RE part, along with everything in it. Like the FIRE ethos is really be as efficient as possible and really concentrate on things that matter and cut out all the other BS because it doesn't matter. And you'll find that if you do that, from my anecdotal experience, you'll save a whole bunch of money and you'll be happier, you'll be healthier, and it'll be better for you. It's like there's so many wins that don't have to do with finance. And that to me is like the philosophy of FIRE.
There is so much great stuff in there, Matt, and I want to tackle most, if not all of it, over the next 40 or so minutes. So thank you for that really useful introduction. We are going to – look, so you and I, we kind of followed each other and kind of in the same orbit on social media and other places for quite a while. You were generous enough to invite me and Dr. Cameron Murray on your podcast to talk about superannuation of all things, and we actually played those episodes on The Good Oil, so thank you for letting us do that as well. I hope by now our listeners are following your podcast and following you around the place. I'll get to some of that towards the end. We can give people a bit of a sense of, give you a plug and give people a sense of how they can follow that continuing journey. But let's wind this whole thing back. You've already mentioned financial freedom. I've mentioned the word or the acronym FIRE. Can I tell you, I think the acronym is a terrible acronym. I mean, FIRE, it's kind of evocative, right? But financially independent, retire early. It is a comma or a colon or a full stop or something. But it works. Yeah. It works. And everyone knows what it is. Well, maybe they don't. That's my point. So maybe you can, not so much from your experience, we'll get to in a minute, but how would you explain the FIRE movement, both in Australia and around the world?
Yeah, this is a really interesting question because my thoughts on this have changed and evolved throughout the years.
Okay.
So FIRE, I mean, you hit it on the head. It's an acronym. So it stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early, which at its most basic explanation simply means, I mean, financial independence is pretty straightforward. You have enough investments that are generating an income to maintain your lifestyle so you don't ever have to work again. I think most people are pretty agree on the definition of financial independence, although there's some people like will disagree on the finer points. The retire early part is the Pandora's box, and it can mean so many things to different people. And a lot of people, they read about FIRE and they think it's a financial movement. I think it's a money movement, but it's actually not. It's more of a life philosophy that just so happens to involve a lot of choices that not only save you money, but further improve your life. And where FIRE started from, I don't think anyone really knows exactly where the acronym come from, but it's controversial because of the word retire. And it's, I think if it didn't have that word retire, it wouldn't have been a movement. And I strongly believe that because a lot of people, a lot of people have tried to, you know, create other acronyms that haven't really taken off. So the FIRE one really stuck, and it sort of, and it grabbed my attention as well. I remember first reading about it, ooh, retire. But I think the movement is, it's almost like anti-consumerism movement in a sense, because, and I would argue, hopefully a lot of your listeners have read the works of a guy named Mr. Money Moustache. He's almost the godfather of the FIRE movement. I would argue he's the creator of the modern day FIRE movement. People will say Vicky Robbins in the 90s, but you can argue back and forth. But the reason his blog was so different for me personally was I had read other blogs that were written in a style of like extreme frugality, save a lot of money and build this nest egg. They were good. Early Retirement Extreme by Jacob was an early one, like 2005. They were good, and I read them, consumed them, and quite enjoyed them. But it wasn't until I read Pete's, he approached the subject in a different manner than a whole lot of other people did. He's like, hey, you can be frugal, but you don't have to be frugal to like sacrifice your life just so you can get to a point where you're financially free.
Right.
It's actually...
Miserable and rich is not cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's actually a better way to live your life. And if I can give you a simple example of that, think about the humble bicycle, for example. I mean, I'm a cyclist. Mr. Money Moustache harps on about it all the time as well. But like a bike, it's not only going to save you money. If you commute, let's say you're 20-minute commute in a car, you can do it in 35, 40 minutes, depending on how fit you are on the bike. Not only is it saving you money, it's healthier and it's better for the environment. It's like a triple win. So he has all these little tips and tricks, and this is where like the whole movement, people that come into the movement, once you've been in it for a while, you'll understand that it's not about being a massive tight ass living in a tent eating rice and beans. It's about making choices and decisions that enrich you financially, but also enrich you from like a life point of view. And I think that's my take on what the FIRE movement is about. It's a life philosophy on how to live a better life that just so happens to master your money along the way.
That's really strong, Matt, because there's so much in this. I think that's important for a whole lot of reasons. So as you say, I think everyone gets financially independent, but most people think financially independent at 67, when I finally get access to my super, hopefully there's enough there, then I won't have to work and that'll be cool. It's the retire bit, but also the retire. The E is also, as much as you said, I think you're right. Without retire, it doesn't take off. But early is kind of where FIRE differentiates. Now, I want to get back to the lifestyle thing in a minute, but I do want to do the finance bit first, even though, as you say, that's the subset of the other.
Sure.
Because of that's kind of where this is where it differentiates itself as a financial outcome or series of outcomes from what we wouldn't otherwise know as kind of normal wealth accumulation, right? Normal wealth accumulation is you just sort of slowly over your working, a full working life to 67, save enough, and eventually you get there and you're okay. The retire early bit kind of says, hey, we can be there more quickly. And that, to your point, that's why the retire thing is a hook, and the retire early bit, I would argue, as the both letters is the stronger hook, because it is literally, hang on, my job isn't the world's most, not mine personally, people saying my job isn't the most satisfying thing in the world. I hate working for the man. If I could actually tell him to go and get stuffed at 32, 38, 45, 51, I'm listening now. Like, and that's, I think you're right. That's why I kind of grabbed most people was, what if we could accelerate this whole thing, have a shorter working life where I didn't have to work in a job I hated. I could go and have enough money and then eventually kind of, you know, live the rest of my life. And I think that's, again, the independent piece of, it is for me, and I'll actually ask you for your definition of financial independence or financial freedom. But for me, it was just that idea of, you know what, if I want to stop working at some point, I can. That's literally combined with, if something happens, I'm okay. If I lose my job, I'm okay. If I have a big expense, I'm okay. Life will be fine. I will be able to deal with it, not having to hope that, gee, fingers crossed, I can make it to 67, still employable, because if I don't, I'm in trouble. So that's what grabbed me. I guess for two questions then. Is that roughly right? But then secondly, horrible double barrel question, what's your definition of financial freedom or financial independence?
Okay, to answer your first question, I think that is right. You hit the nail on the head. And I just want to add to that, I think that the retire early part really hooks people in, and it certainly did me. But I also, and like my thoughts on this has slightly evolved throughout my journey in the FIRE community, which is over 10 years. I've been a part of it since I started my blog and podcast in 2015, and I'm pretty sure I was the first, or there's actually one blog that you could argue was FIRE in like 2014, but I was right up there with one of the first ones in Australia. And there was no real, you know, community when I started, which hence the reason I started something, but it's really thriving at the moment, although the whole ASIC Finfluencer laws, I don't know if it will be thriving for much longer. But there is a large part of the FIRE community that is, how do I put this bluntly, that simply doesn't like their job. And I fell into that as well when I first, I started looking to like I Googled, you know, financial independence, how to get rich, blah, all that good stuff, because I was not satisfied in my job. And I do wonder, having worked now internationally, having started my own business now, and having so much fun in my job, I do tell people, I'm like, maybe if you're not enjoying your job, consider moving to another position or going like reskilling, doing something else, because financial independence is a long grind. Even if you do it hardcore FIRE 10 years, it's still a long grind. And I think you're much better to try to find a bit of meaning and satisfaction in your job. And you could probably do that a lot quicker. Anyway, that's a whole nother topic. To your second point with the definition of financial independence or financial freedom. I pretty much agree. Your investments are generating enough money that you don't ever have to work again. So you need to know your expenses. That's why in the FIRE community, it's so important to track how much you spend, or else you won't know how big of a portfolio you'll need to generate enough income to cover those expenses. However, I will say, I think there's too many people, especially online, that look at it black and white. They're either like, you're financially independent or you're not. It doesn't work like that. There's spectrums of financial independence. And I speak from a position, what I would consider as sort of Coast FIRE or Flamingo FIRE, if you want to keep up to date with the latest acronyms. Yeah. And basically what that means is, we've amassed so much that the snowball is, I call it like escape velocity. It's going to keep rolling down the hill, and it will reach my financial independence number eventually. It's only a matter of time, but I'm not actively adding snow to that snowball at the moment. I'm doing other things at the moment, but it's still generating a nice bit of passive income. But it's not, if you want to go technicalities, we're not financially independent, but geez, I feel like we are. And I live a life that it's like we are financially independent, even though if you want to go technical based on the 4% rule, we're not.
So that's it. That's interesting. Those acronyms are new to me. I'm not going to ask you to define them unless they're relevant. But but I do think it's interesting because, well, there's two things there, right? You talked about the kind of anti-consumerism movement. I really do want to talk about that a little bit. You also talk about the snowball. And it seems to me that, as you say, and I guess listeners are probably intuiting the same thing. And maybe I'm wrong, by the way, so tell me if I am. But it seems to me that you've kind of gone, hey, we were going full bore for this thing. And then I realized that actually I'm going to have enough at some point, and I'm not in a hurry anymore because I like what I'm doing. And so it's almost, and I think you're right about, you want to be able to, like, you know, for me personally, I want to know that if the Motley Fool says, Scott, it's been fun, but we're done, that I'm going to be okay. By the same token, I love my job. I'm not going to quit anytime soon. So I can afford to not have to scrimp and save and as you say, live in a tent with beans and rice because I'm doing a bit of both. I'm probably not as directly kind of linked into fire as a movement in itself. And I'm not sure, frankly, that I want to retire early because I'd be bored anyway and I'd be on Twitter twice as much and nobody needs that. but I think it's, you know, there is some element of that idea of it's almost a question. I mean, some people do it for the game of it, so you just can. And look, if you love traveling or you love doing a hobby that means you can't or don't want to work, then of course it makes sense to get there more quickly. But it does strike me as, I don't want to get too Eastern religion here, but you've already said it, it's a bit of a life philosophy idea of get to a point where you are comfortable enough that the combination of your investments and your life and your work, the things you want to spend money on, again, that consumerism piece comes in there, all starts to feel like the jigsaw's kind of close enough together that if you needed to, like if I lost my job tomorrow, I'd be okay. I can't replace my income yet, but I'd be okay. But I don't want to lose. I don't want to quit, you know, tomorrow if I don't have to. It does strike me as it is a bigger thing. Do you think is that the evolution of FIRE, or has FIRE always been a subset of that?
Well, I just want to make a clarification first of all, Scott. The whole you're not allowed to work in retirement thing, and then there is a actual term for these sort of people like early retirement police that go around, you know, saying you're not actually retired, you're working. Yeah, in the FIRE community, and this happens with so many different communities. It's not even to do with finances. Certain words take on different meanings. And let me tell you, from someone that's been a part of the community and contributed and helped build it in Australia, yeah. Retire in FIRE does not mean you don't work. Literally, I can't say literally no one because there are some that maybe want to, you know, sit, drink pina coladas all day. But vast bulk, I'm talking 99%, plan to do work. But it's a different, it's meaningful work. And even if they're in the same job, to your point, it's work is so much better when you know you can quit any day, when you know you're not financially like, you know, what do they call, wage slave to the job and you're not going to lose your house, it makes work so much more enjoyable. So I think my interpretation of the retire early has always been retire from the rat race and then do something else that you like. And there's, if I can call from, I think it's a ancient Chinese proverb or Socrates, maybe a Greek one or something like that. I'm probably going to butcher this, but it's something like every man has two lives and the second one begins when he knows that he only has one. And I feel like there's a little bit of that with FIRE and the retire early, like your second career will begin once you reach a certain level of financial stability, because all of a sudden you're open up and you can be like, I don't have to do that job because of the money anymore. I can choose whatever career I want to go down. Like meaningful work is awesome. I want to do meaningful work till the day I die. So I that's a common misconception. I understand because it's, you know, retire. It's in the bloody acronym. So people think you don't want to work, but it means something different in the FIRE community. I just wanted to make that point.
I love that. Maybe you could then talk to us about your journey. You said you kind of, things have changed over your time. And I wonder whether, I'm going to ask you actually, so I'll ask you to tell us about the journey, but I'm actually curious whether is it a product of the journey itself? Is it your own separate, I'll call it awakening to use a wanky term, but you know, was it a sense of, or something, you kind of went, I'm doing this thing, it's like, wake up one day and thought, hang on, I'm doing this wrong? Or, you know, so what was the journey and why, what was the thought process? What prompted you to change the way you thought about FIRE as you went?
I'll try to make it as short as possible. So I started full-time work at the end of 2011. I'm a country boy, played footy. I'm a normal guy, honestly. Didn't do particularly well. Did well enough to get into uni. You know, studied IT. Went to a university where I'm from. Got a job at the end of 2011. Anyway, started full-time work. Now, I'd always known 38 hours a week. Mm-hmm. Sort of in the back of your head, you're like, oh yeah, full-time work. It's you got to go there every day, Monday to Friday. Yeah. But it wasn't until I started doing it. And I don't know if you can remember, Scott. Like, but when you start full-time work, it's pretty full-on. It's like you've just been at uni. And I can rock up if I want to. It's, you know, and you're partying, you're playing Call of Duty till bloody 3 in the morning with mates. Like, it's just an absolute party. It's fantastic. Yep. And then all of a sudden, I'm in a cubicle for more than 8 hours a day because I've got it's a 50-minute commute there, a 50-minute commute back, nearly 2 hours. So all these things add up. And then my first week, I'm like sitting there like, geez, I'm tired. How am I so tired? I'm only like 22. I shouldn't be this tired. And then I'm playing footy on the weekends. Anyway, I just, after the first year or so, not even, I think even after like a couple of months, I was like, there's no way that people do this for 40 years. There's just no way. Now, I didn't have the experience of hindsight that I have now that like it gets better. You know, you can start to like once you, if you're young, you got to put in the work. You got to, you know, move up the ranks. You got to upskill. You got to do everything that you need to do. So I wasn't aware that that work becomes a bit more fun and you get some like responsibilities. You can sort of control outcomes a little bit more as you get more experience. You sort of know nothing when you first join the workforce. It's like no one's listening to you in meetings, and you know, I understand that now, but I didn't when I was 22, 23, and as a result I was just in these, I felt like I wasn't really contributing too much. Like I was doing work, but I didn't have a lot of say on what went on the projects, which for good reason. I was only young, junior. But anyway, long story short, I thought this is a lot of my life that is being consumed by this thing called work.
And what have I done?
I wasn't getting the satisfaction out of work at that point that I am now. And that led me to pursue and research and Google finance books and how to get rich. And then I come across the concept of financial freedom through Rich Dad Poor Dad, very, very famous book. And like you alluded to earlier, Scott, a lot of financial freedom books, financial freedom has been around forever, but the FIRE concept is relatively new. They're all talking about it at like 60, 65. And I'm thinking that's 40 years away. I don't want to reach that point when I'm 60, 65. And then I stumbled across Mr. Money Moustache's blog, and that really changed things because it was like financial independence on steroids. But also the most important thing was it gave meaning to why you were saving this money and why investing can lead to a better life. Like the meaning, there was a lot of blogs out there that were really good at saving money and investing and the theory behind it all, which I loved, I still read, but I thought Pete's was one of the first that he sprinkled in some philosophy into the teachings of, you know, frugal and why it's better. And that's really, I mean, in a nutshell, that's my journey. As soon as I discovered Mr. Money Moustache, I had a reason to save copious amounts of money every single year and have a really high savings rate. I was always frugal. Like my old man's Italian, you know, immigrant mentality. So big
the stereotype sometimes are true. Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was always the tightest of the group, wore it with a badge of honor. But yeah, no. But before, like, I was always saving for like a new car or something. There was never, you know, I couldn't really see past a few thousand dollars. Like, what's the point? And then financial freedom was a clear as anything that, yes, this is a very noble pursuit, and I can understand how your life will get better once you build up this financial stability. And that's really my journey. And then, I mean, I grinded for like 6 or 7 years, grinded with me and my girlfriend at the time, wife now. Played footy on weekends, didn't really do a whole lot. Like went on a few, you know, trips around the world and stuff, but not anything major like I did when I turned 29, which is when we left Australia, lived in London for 2 years. And that changed a lot of things, not even just from a financial point of view, but from like a life point of view. It really broadened my horizons, and especially to do with work. That was a big thing of that trip. It was, I went over there for the travel, obviously, the doorstep of Europe, but the amount, what I got out of that trip from a work point of view was so close to being the best thing out of it. It wasn't quite as good as the things that we've seen, but I worked with new people, new industries. Some work was intense. I worked in bank in London, which is like the finance capital, and it was just so much fun. And people were like, the vibe in London and a capital city was so different to the vibe and energy and aspirations and ambitions that I had felt in my country town of 20,000 people, which, you know, horses for courses. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but as a young 29, I still think that's pretty young, 29 year old man, I was very inspired by a lot of the work that people were doing and these entrepreneurs. And it was just a melting pot of really talented, hardworking people that were trying to change the world. And I really got inspired by that. And that culture, it gave me new meaning to what work can give you that I wasn't finding where I was from. And now actually I've pivoted and I'm trying to bring some of that back to my country town, which is why I've got new goals. I'm almost like past the point of fire. I still, like, I'll always be fire, but it's, I don't really care about the money and finances anymore. What I'm trying to do now, I'm actually trying to get some employees in my business, and I want to do a co-working space. I've just got other aspirations, and I don't really like care about the investing and stuff as much as I did in my 20s as I was toiling away in the cubicle.
Which is where I want to kind of get to, because you talked about it changing your life, and you just talked about some examples of why. And I'm going to ask you to take a trip down a parallel universe with me, because I mean, you're talking about you're a son of an Italian immigrant, you're always a tight ass, and that's that. You know, those things are some combination of nurture and nature, but you can't escape them either way. And yet, I wonder, had you had a spectacular life experience as an employee at 21 or 19, had you been in London at 23, are we talking to Matt the Aussie firebug, or are we talking to Matt the committed career oriented ladder climber, or Matt the entrepreneur who just kind of goes, you know what, don't worry, it's fine, I'm going to make all my money doing something else? And again, it's not good or bad, obviously, but I am curious as to how much you think those experiences shaped you, and how much you would have been that person because you already are. Because it is interesting, sliding doors and all that. I wouldn't be here but for about 7 or 8 significant coincidences in my work life that just are stupidly lucky. And I'd be somewhere else and hopefully be successful and happy and equally lucky in a different direction. But that's kind of the way life goes.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting point. And I think you wouldn't be talking to Matt the Aussie Firebug, if I'm being completely honest. And when I went at 29, I just scraped in the visa, T5 visa.
I did the same thing. A few years before you, but I did exactly the same thing. Yeah.
31 or something. But it was such a life altering experience getting off the island for 2 years. And I did wonder, I'm like, man, I should have done this like 5 years ago. But then you can't think like that too much, because part of the reason we went, and I'm just built like this. I'm just conservative by nature. And I had to quit my job to go. And that's why I put it off for so many years. I'm like, would I have actually gone? I'm not too sure if I hadn't had the financial stability to go. And that's just the way I'm built. I admire people, and I'm envious of these guys that will start a business at like 23, 24, nothing to hide, and just go for it. And it's so good, because they're almost living the RE component. They're doing what they want to do, but they don't have the FI, the financial backing. But really, they've like leapfrogged the game, because that you want to get to the RE part, whatever that looks like. You like, that's the whole purpose of it, because I know people that are financially independent that never actually do anything with it. And I know a really sad story of a bloke I used to work with. He actually, and this is tragic, but he died of a brain aneurysm the year that he was going to retire and travel around Australia with his wife. And sometimes I think, I'm like, the financial independence is important, don't get me wrong, but like, it's important to live life as well. And you don't want to reach financial independence and not do anything with it, because I think, and people out there listening probably knows of that person that could probably retire 3 times over, but still going to that job, and they're not like, they're pretty miserable, and it's like, what are they even doing? So you do have to make the leap of faith at some point. But I think, London was such a life-altering experience, and I definitely would have went a different trajectory in life. And I think that there's a common theme, not speaking for everyone, but very common theme, that people that are attracted to the FIRE movement don't particularly love their job. Not everyone, but I've spoken to thousands of people through the internet and in real life in FIRE catch-ups, and there is a common theme. Don't like my boss, I'm escaping the rat race through financial independence. So I've learned that throughout the years, that, hey, you can actually, don't wait 10 years, just do something, make a change now. Cause I wish I did that and I didn't. And I mean, regret's a strong word, but, life's full of experiences, and you can look back and, pass on that knowledge now.
Now, let me kindly challenge that. Only because I've had similar experiences in my life, and I think it's, again, though I'm not putting words in your mouth, nor am I having a go at you. It's easy for me and other people to say, well, obviously you should do this thing. Now, when you and I can do it from positions of relative comfort financially and otherwise and work-wise, easy to say, well, of course I should have done something else. Part of me thinks that I think that in part because I'm now financially comfortable. So those other stresses feel less important. And you kind of go through the other end of like, I've got rid of those stresses. See, they weren't really stresses at all. You guys should be like me. It's okay. Not that I'm, by the way, again, ready to retire. But, you know, if I lost my job tomorrow, I would be fine. You know, I wouldn't be flying the world first class, but I'd be okay. I'm like you, trying to roll that snowball down the hill, and we'll get to some point at some point if I keep working. But between now and then, if it happened, it would happen. But I actually can see, and my young bloke's just bought a house with his fiance, and there is you know, a part of that which, you know, easy in hindsight to say, of course you guys shouldn't worry about the things I worried about either. And now I'm through it, I can see it wasn't a big deal and I made it and I wish I hadn't worried about it. But I wonder if it's actually possible to not be that. I mean, your own story is, I started working, I thought, oh my God, this is terrible. I'm gonna try and retire early. I don't know the answer, and I'm sure the answer is it depends. But I am just curious as to that idea. It's sometimes easy for us, I'll make it about me, not you. It's easy for me after the point to say, well, obviously it wasn't a big deal and obviously things worked out okay for me. So obviously it should work out for you as well. There's a bit of survivorship bias, a bit of that. You know, I used to love business biographies. I don't read many anymore because, not because they're not great stories, but it's a list of all the people who were lucky enough that their hard work paid off. Not, they had to work hard, but they, you know, can I be Richard Branson? No, of course not. Can I be, you know, Elon Musk? No. Can I be Steve Jobs? No. Not because they're not great people, not because there's not some really cool things, not because they're not inspiring, just because I'm not in those circumstances with that luck required to do that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I've been challenged as well on other podcasts about that exact point, that I had such a good time. You know, I took risks later on when I was more financially stable. And like, everyone is a product of their own experiences. So I can only say what, you know, I've experienced, but I do want to highlight that, yes, I have been particularly lucky, and yes, Australia has been particularly stable, and we've gone through some rough times, but there are times in history, definitely, where imagine if I went to London at 23 and then drastic happened, and then, you know, I couldn't. So there is that as well.
With credit card debt, you got to work because you have to work, and
for sure. Yeah, I don't want to romanticize it too much. When I look back at what happened in the last 10 years, I'm just like, I probably could have done that trip earlier and not concentrated on the finances so much. But then again, you to your point, you never know. So yes, I could be looking at it through, rose-tinted glasses or whatever.
But again, it wasn't a direct challenge. I often think of that myself. And as you were mentioning, I was thinking it's easy to do. Can we go to, I want to talk about this anti-consumerism thing, because I think this is really, really important. I think it's, And there is a massive, massive irony. I don't know if you feel it as well. I invest in a whole lot of consumer-focused companies, right, in my portfolio. Yeah. And part of me is really happy when people go and spend all this money. At the same time, I'm on Twitter and radio and Facebook and God knows everywhere else saying, pay off your debts, get a better rate, don't take credit cards, don't use buy now, pay later. I'm also very mindful, by the way, that I benefit from exactly that activity when they use it at the shops and you know, consumer establishments I own shares in. But I do feel the same thought sort of tug as you do. Now, I'm probably not as non-anti-consumerist as you are, but I bought a secondhand, you know, 4-year-old Hilux, which I just love to death. And, you know, it's not an EV and it's probably not what, but it was secondhand, and I bought the base model because it had vinyl floors, so I didn't have to worry about the carpets getting dirty. And part of me, like, I've really found, almost to your point, like, I'm not a son of an immigrant. My parents were particularly frugal, but they, you know, the old man was a fiery, mum was a nurse. You know, this, well, you know, so there is something about a self-image which says, I'm just not going to be the person who wants the best of everything. I'm going to find the things that work for me in my life and then just enjoy those. And if it costs me less, then that's a benefit too. So what's your journey into this anti-consumerism? Always sounds very kind of, you know, anarchist, burn the buildings down. But I'm assuming that's not what you mean, though. If it is, feel free, because I'd love the exclusive. No. But what does that mean for you?
First of all, I just want to say, like, I would be what most people consider anti-consumer, but that doesn't mean I don't consume. I mean, worldwide standards, and this is the beauty of travel, right? This is the beauty of travel, how much it opens your eyes to how things are different in other parts of the world. That's what I like. It's just, you come back a different person. You go, I mean, it's so cliche and it's almost a bit like, you know, to say that, but it's so true. If you travel around the world, you're not the same person when you come back. Anyway, I have a Galaxy Watch 4. Mm-hmm. I have a Samsung S22. I have a smartwatch, really like high-end smartwatch, smartphone. I got a 70-inch TV on my wall. Nice. out in the kitchen. Like, yeah. don't get me wrong, worldwide standards, consume the hell out of the Earth's material, more than 98% of human beings on the planet. So I want to make that point very clear. However, I just consume a lot less than the norm in first world countries like Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK. And that is the differentiating point. And I just, it's not about not consuming. It's just about, I mean, if I could sum up the FIRE movement, like if I could have one word to describe it, I would probably say efficiency in all aspects of life. And that is so part of my core, that if I see something that's inefficient, I just don't want to do it, even though even if it's what everyone else is doing, it irks me. Even if I save money, even if it saves money, if it's inefficient, it's just, it doesn't sit right with me. And like an example of that, I mean, one that probably everyone can relate to is when they put avocados in the plastic pockets at supermarkets, you know, and it's like, and for single avocados.
Yeah.
And it's like, the fruit has its own casing. It comes in a naturally organic made case.
I do your worst one, mate. Bananas. The plastic things, the plastic things for, you know, the lunchbox things for bananas. Like, it literally has. Comes in a wrapper.
So this level of waste and just inefficiencies really irks me. And I just think that if you apply that same concept that you just try to be efficient with most things, and I'd say almost just sensible. Like, you don't have to be hyper efficient. There are people in the community that are so like outrageously hyper efficient. Like, some of these stories will boggle your mind. But if you just be sensible and you scale it back and you realize you can recognize when the marketing machine is trying to get you to buy things that signal to other humans that you're somehow superior or that you somehow belong to this tribe or whatever it is. And we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it. But as long as you can acknowledge that and say, I'm comfortable making that purchase for XYZ reasons, and then move about your day, that's really the most important thing. I just think that a lot of people in first world countries are mindlessly consuming and they don't even know what they're consuming for.
So true.
And that's, I think the FIRE movement is a pushback against that. It's like, hold on, we've got so much technology, wealth, abundance in these first world countries. Why are we still working 40 hours a week, two people, to pay for things that we don't even need to impress people we don't even like? It's crazy.
I'm curious as to your thoughts when that goes to, I guess, I think about what we consume and how we consume. And you mentioned before the idea of retiring from the rat race rather than retiring. And so much of this, neither of us, I'm not, I don't know if you're a licensed psychologist, I'm certainly not. But I spent a lot of time thinking about behavioral psychology from a finance perspective. The things that we are taught to believe and just absorb because we are members of a society that has dominant beliefs and views. That whole retire from the rat race thing, it's one thing to say you've got enough money to retire from the rat race. You've given the example of some people who, you know, could have retired early and didn't, and some tragic stories. It is fascinating to me the things that we do because we're told we're supposed to want to do them, and so we kind of do without really thinking about it. And those epiphanies like yours that different people have during different times of life in, hang on, what the hell am I doing? And I say that on one hand. The other hand, I'm going to say about my listeners right now, I'm sure there's people listening to us here who are like, well, obviously you can't do that because, and then whatever the reasons they have in their own minds. And I'm going to challenge our listeners a little tiny bit here and just say, if that's you, if you're kind of like, well, that's stupid because X, Y, and Z, I'm just going to kind of, and I'll get you a comment on it, Matt, but I'm just going to say to those listeners, just have a really good think about actually, couldn't you do something different? You know, and there are plenty of people who can't, but you've come from a country background. I live in the region. It's not exactly country. I'm in Barrel in Southern Highlands, New South Wales. It's perfectly urban, thank you very much, but it's a bit away from Sydney. But I mean, my wife and I are different people. I would love to do nothing more than go and live somewhere another hour and a half away from here with a house that costs a third of what my place costs, with more space and just, like, you know, internet and technology. I love my technology too. Don't worry, I got a Pixel 6A next to me and a Fitbit watch and all that sort of stuff. But I guess I just wanted to challenge our listeners that, you know, the things that we think we have to do because that they're the preconditions that people have set for us. Well, of course, I've got to work close to the city because that's where the jobs are. Okay, well, you work close to the city, you get to work in a certain job, which pays you enough to live in the place you live in. But if you had a different job in a different place, you know, there were just all these things that I think it's really, really, really hard to buck the trend. And I'm hardly an anti-conformist, right? I don't work in the finance industry. But I will say, and listeners who've listened to my other podcast, Motley Fool Money, know that Andrew and I talk regularly. You know, a lot of people think we're horrible capitalists. Now a lot of people think we're dirty lefties. And there's something probably neither, but somewhere in between, which is just when you kind of stop and go, but hang on, couldn't there be a whole different set of circumstances? That strikes me in not exactly a nutshell, it's bigger than that, but that strikes me as kind of the heart of FIRE, which is just, if you look at this again with a clean slate, you came down from you know, some alien spaceship and said, so tell me again why you're working 60 hours to afford a place close to a job you don't like, in a place you don't like, that's too expensive. The whole thing is a little bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And like the amount of progress we have made, like as a human race, it doesn't add up. And I mean, when you get into the economy, when you get into the economics of this, it's very hard to, like, it's such a big can of worms. But it doesn't add up to me that we've made all this improvement, and it's resulted in two people having to work full time to afford, you know, a place to live. It's like, weren't we promised 3-day work weeks like in the 70s and stuff? Like, how is this still not happening? And we're just consuming more. It's like technology has freed up so many people. It's you know, done all these great things, but Jesus, people are working just as hard, if not harder, than like some of their parents. And I just want to say one more point on that is, like, you want to run your own race and do what you want to do. And that's like, if you can leave one message on like what the benefits of FIRE is, I would say that that's it. And I would say that pretty much, well, most financial commentators, yourself included, Scott, preach a similar message, but it's just worded differently. And maybe the you know, how you get there is slightly differently. I mean, you look at Barefoot Investor, the biggest financial, you know, voice in Australia, tread your own path. Think about that. That's his sign off line, right? Run your own race, march to the beat of your own drum. We're all trying to say the same thing. It's just comms on how we say that is slightly worded differently. But I think we're 95% crossing over on the, you know, the pie charts.
Yeah, that's right. The Venn diagram.
Yeah, the Venn diagram. That's it.
We need to bring this to a close. I could talk to you for hours about this. I just wanted to, I guess, to maybe bring it full circle a little bit. I think, you know, what I think is different about general finance commentary and FIRE, which I really love about FIRE, is most people would say, I'm in the rat race. I've built a life of expenses, and financial independence means being able to pay my current expenses with my portfolio. And people look at it and they go, how am I possible? Of course I got to work till 67. How can I possibly afford my Porsche and my 5-bedroom house with a swimming pool and a cleaner and a pool boy and a whatever else? I'm going to have to work at 67 to afford all that stuff. What do you mean retire early? And I think part of what I love about the FIRE thing is it just kind of, it's, and again, there is ultra frugality, which for some people is just fun. And if they love it, like, they really, like, some people make a game of it and they get that. You know, one of the joyful frugalista, whose name I can't remember, which it starts with this, I can't remember, is it Sarah, I think? She's fantastic, right? She's wonderful. And she'll, you know, she'll buy the bottle of wine for Aldi and she just loves it. And that's its own satisfaction, which I just love. I love if you can make a game of it and really get life satisfaction from just being as tight as you can. That's cool in itself, because if it's genuinely fun rather than a slog, then that's awesome. But I think somewhere in between that and the general financial independence preached by you talk at the industry, and you're right. But what I think most of the industry gets it wrong, which is how can you afford your $150,000 yearly expenses? Your 4% rule, all of a sudden, well, hang on, how can I have a $6 million, you know, portfolio? That's crazy. I'm never going to be able to retire. And your thing is partly, actually, you can by putting some more money aside, but it's also, hey, what if your life didn't actually require all those things you think it does because you're keeping up with the Joneses? That's what I love about the proposition of FIRE, I've got to say.
Yeah, that is really the secret sauce, Scott, of the FIRE movement, and probably what the big difference with us. There's really two levers that you can pull when you want to reach financial independence. You can either, if you desire something, you can work really hard, you can hustle your butt off, probably years of, you know, working away. And if you're enjoying that, more power to you. Awesome. Like, not here to judge. Or you can simply desire less. And I think the FIRE movement takes the latter approach. But there's a whole movement. Probably I'd say even more popular on TikTok, YouTube. It's like the hustle culture. It's just a completely different movement, you know. Both are preaching to get to your goals and to live a great life and everything. But one is, I want everything. And the other is, hey, you know what? You can actually be super happy, live a fantastic, healthy lifestyle that doesn't actually cost that much. And everyone's, what that means for everyone is slightly different. But it's possible. And that's what I think the FIRE movement and what Mr. Money Moustache really showed a lot of people, it's actually doable and it's not a pipe dream. You can, if you like crunch the numbers, you know, do all your models and stuff and concentrate and work hard, it's actually doable. This isn't some like you got to have a huge salary, you got to win the lottery, you got to have rich parents. It's actually doable, which is very cool. You might have to make some sacrifices along the way, but knowing that it's possible, I think is just another ace, you know, people can hold to say, all right, if I really don't like this, I can make changes or I can achieve this. Other people are doing it. It's possible.
It's a very rat race kind of thing. I wanted to leave it there, but I do want to pick up on what you just said because you talk about making some sacrifices along the way. I think I'm going to say sacrifices in quotation marks a bit because if I have to sacrifice the infinity pool and the flashy new town / new farm / South Yarra / choose your favorite CBD wanky suburb and say if I'm going to live there, I've got to do all these things. And you're right, you do. That's actually what's going to have to happen. If you want all that stuff, you're going to have to work really hard, do a side hustle, and work yourself to the bone. And if you love that, knock yourself out. But I think why I want to put sacrifice in quotation marks is, and I'm some example of this. I've moved as far away as my wife will let me from the city. But we moved from the city. We bought a cheaper house than we sold. We got more land and space. I'm lucky I can work from home. So again, you've got to be able to make your lifestyle suit the circumstance. But did I have to, air quotes, sacrifice by moving out of the city or, giving up the chance to have a penthouse apartment in whatever suburb? Part of that is, air quotes, sacrifice. They're just actually going, what's really important versus how much was I doing? Because speaking of Instagram and TikTok, I saw on Insta, my friend has a house that overlooks the harbor and I want those things too because they're apparently cool. That's the other thing. Like, is water nice? Of course it is. I'm sitting looking at some trees outside which are equally beautiful. There is a sense of, really questioning. We sound like we're doing, again, the Eastern religion thing. But there's a sense of like genuinely questioning, actually, what is it that is important and why is it important? Is it genuinely important? And frankly, if you could have 10 years worth of extra or less, demanding work or work you hate or whatever else it is, because if I did though made those choices, I'd be just as happy and I could work less to do it. It's like, that seems like a pretty good deal to me.
Yeah, and that's why I say it's a life philosophy. I always I get this point across. It's not about money, being a tight ass, frugal, whatever. It's changing your mind. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. But it's more important to change your mind. That the power of the mind and what you desire and what you don't desire, that's really where it begins. And if you become a part of the community and plenty of forums, Facebook group, YouTube channels, you can start to learn that, hey, these guys are living a fantastic life. It's just actually not costing that much money.
Yeah. That's a lovely place. But before we finish, I don't want to leave it just there. We have to ask you our favorite questions, Matt. You've been very, very generous with your time. Listeners, by the way, a bit of behind the scenes here. Matt's had to struggle with some audio as we've done this. He's been very generous to really struggle through that. So, mate, I appreciate you doing that for us.
I'm embarrassed with my struggles.
No, don't be, mate. I appreciate you. No. Oh, mate, computers do that. It's the old joke about if Microsoft built cars, they do, 1,000 miles to the gallon, but they blow up every 6 months. Let's get to the questions. So firstly, I assume, hopefully, it was some of your leisure time. Now you're almost financially independent, or you are, but you're not retired. What are you reading, watching, streaming, podcasting, listening to? What's on your playlists?
I've currently been watching the Conor McGregor 4-part series on Netflix with the wife.
Okay.
Very interesting character. Love his theatrics, but he went a bit crazy. Uh-huh. I mean, he's such a character, but I wish he'd he'd rein it in and just concentrate on what made him so special at the start. So he's lost the plot a bit.
Okay. A cautionary tale.
A cautionary tale.
All right. Now, obviously, fire is its own trend, and feel free to comment on that or anything else. But what trends are you watching locally around the world in finance, in society in general? What's on your mind? What's captivating you?
Oh, it's got to be artificial intelligence, Scott. So this is I could talk a bit. We'd have a whole nother podcast on this. I work, and I've started my own company. Right. It's in data and analytics, right?
Hey,
and
nice.
This is part of my, retiring from the rat race. I've probably been working harder in the last couple of months than I ever did my previous employment. But I'm really passionate about this. I want to build out a small team. I want a co-working space. Like, this is sort of my next goals for the next decade, rather than just building the snowball and financial independence. But artificial intelligence, my goodness, people, if you're listening out there, okay, it is coming in my space, data and analytics. I'm seeing some videos. It's in demo at the moment, but wowee, there is going to be some shakeups within the next couple of months. I don't know when this episode is going to be released, but for a data analyst, I don't think it's going to kill jobs. Although, like, if you're a bad data analyst, you're probably going to get the flick or you're going to get replaced. But I, from my work, and I'm using ChatGTP at the moment, it is insane for coding. So if you're a programmer and you aren't not using ChatGTP, I'm telling you, start using it, because it's got to be one of the best use cases, because it talks a lot of crap. Like, it makes up stuff all the time, right? ChatGPT. But what you can do with coding, and this is the beauty of it, you can test it instantly to see if it works. So you can just say, hey, write me a function that pulls an API from Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And it will either work or it won't work in your program. And that's the beauty of it. Whereas I would never trust it for a paper or I would never trust it for that. But for coding, it's insane. And that, I'm watching that space very, very closely. It's very exciting.
That's awesome, Matt. I will say, just for a laugh, I did type in ChatGPT, who is Scott Phillips? And it told me that I was the co-founder of The Motley Fool, which I'm clearly not. And I founded it with my brother, Tom Phillips. And I just want to slowly say, for the record, it was Tom and David Gardner who founded it in America in 1993, a good decade and a half before I joined the company. So you're right. There's a bit of work to be done. But yeah,
it just makes up stuff.
Yeah,
and with confidence as well. My sister, we Googled, because people don't know, I've got a quite unique last name. I don't think there is another group of families in the whole of Australia that has our last name, but we typed it in, what's the history behind the last name. It just made up a whole bunch of stuff, and it was so funny. And my sister screenshotted it, she sent it to the family chat, and I'm like, this, like, it's so confident, not even giving you a hit, like, this could be wrong. It's like, no, this is where you're from, and there was a famous person, that person never existed. It was just like, yeah, be careful with it.
Yeah, death or glory. Hey, let's. You've already given us some good advice for people in the AI and data analytics industry. Let me then ask you again, and maybe it's a summary of what we just talked about. Maybe it's something entirely different. What advice would you give someone who was starting their journey into fire? Or who's considering it? Maybe different. Maybe slightly different answer. Answer it as you want.
Yeah. I'd give them a lot of advice. And this changes. And again,
read your blog, right?
Well, yeah, you can read my blog. There's heaps of good blogs out there. But I just, again, I'm going to look at this through slightly rose-tinted glasses. But a good book to balance fire, because you can get too entrenched in it. It happened to me. You get too full on. 70% savings rate. Skipping out on meals. Skipping out on trips with your mates in your 20s that you'll never get back again. Read Die with Zero, but only, caveat, only if you're in the FIRE movement. Do not read that book if you're as an intro into finance, okay? Because the guy, what's his name? I forgot. He's been on my podcast, but he preaches, the whole concept of the book is any money left over once you die has essentially been wasted. Now, he has some really good chapters on donating to charity, giving money to kids, but it's a fantastic book. But it is almost, it has to be paired with a fire mindset, because if you read it, you'll just be like, I'm just going to YOLO, credit card debt, let's go around the world three times and rack up 100K. Die with Zero is a very dangerous concept if you're not financially literate. But it is almost the perfect book for people that's too much of a tight ass. And I'd say, wrapping this up, I would say that just be careful on your journey towards financial independence or life in general, there are certain things throughout stages of your life that are so precious that you can't actually get back. And that's all I would say, that just sort of write down, and this is in the book, it's fantastic, write down everything you want to do in life and then put them in buckets with decades, because a sail Croatia trip is going to be way different when you're 25 than when you're 60. So you can write sail Croatia is on my bucket list, but hey, be careful, because if you miss certain things, you know, hiking Everest, whatever, you can't really do that when you're older. Like, just be careful, write down what you want to do, and don't be too tight, because some experiences are there and then they're gone. And that's all I'd say.
I'm going to just bracket that with one of my favorite memes. It's not particularly clever, but it's good. There's a photo, and there's a couple in a gondola in Venice, an old couple, and they're both asleep, laying on each other's shoulder. And it just says, "Don't wait till you retire to travel." And it's kind of that's the visual version of what you just said. It's a good one. Hey, let me say, Bill Perkins, the author of Die With Zero, just for our listeners who are just so they can do that, and Serena Bird is the joyful frugalista. I've looked up those while you were chatting, so thank you for giving me the time to do that. They are both fantastic, very much worth reading. Mate, let's finish it off with one. I always ask this last question, and it's a presumptive question because I ask it of everybody and it assumes the same. I only had one guest so far disagree with the premise. I'm going to ask you, Matt, what are you optimistic about? And it assumes you're an optimist, which is why it's presumptuous of me. Go on, yes. Are you an optimist? And if you are, what are you optimistic
Absolutely.
About?
I'm a big optimist. Right. I was going to say AI, but might be our overlords in the not too distant future.
You're right. Optimistic until we're not. That's right.
Optimistic about, I'm a pretty, I'm definitely an optimist in general. Specifically, I'm optimistic about a lot of different things. If I could give you a specific one, and I'm a techie, right? I'm in the tech, and this people might disagree with this, but I'm very much into, I don't own one yet, very much into this whole, and you're probably going to disagree with me.
Go on.
Read your tweets, Scott. Electrifying everything, and that includes vehicles. Maybe not trucks and stuff. Yeah. I've heard different things about you know, doing the hydrogen trucks and everything, but EVs, I'm very bullish about. Now, I do own some EV companies through just the nature of ETFs, but maybe I should disclose that. But there is some transformations that I think are going to happen in the next 10, 15 years that is going to be awesome, not just from a climate point of view, like lowering the CO2 emitted by these old petrol burners, but the what you can do, especially for doubling as a home battery in these EVs, awesome. I think that is going to be, and I just see a world where you're decentralizing a lot of the energy required to power the world, maybe not the whole world, but definitely first world countries if we can get onto it, you know, sooner rather than later. But the idea that you'll have an EV in your garage that is powering your home, and then in the event of like a blackout or, you know, a power station going down, there's talks that they could get a whole bunch of, I mean, the infrastructure would need to be upgraded, but a whole bunch of cars that are plugged into the grid, and they could actually draw from that power bank and like divert the power through the grid somewhere else. And I think that's really, really cool. Our next car possibly will be an electric vehicle. It's very expensive, doesn't make financial sense, but at the moment it doesn't. But I'm very optimistic that will play a crucial role in solving this energy crisis. And I think it's going to be here sooner rather than later. And it's probably going to catch a few people by surprise just of what's been going on in the industry and how much progress is being made.
I'm not going to disagree with you as much as you thought. I know this is your podcast, or it's about you, not about me. But for what it's worth, we've just installed a heat pump rather than a gas hot water system.
Yeah.
We are also in the middle of ripping out an underfloor ducted, because it's cold up here, underfloor gas and electric combo heater. We're going to replace it with pure electric.
Partly these are efficiencies, Scott. Right, exactly.
Well,
what we love.
It's going to cost a lot of money. So it's mostly efficiency. It's mostly environmental. It's partly efficiency. We'll get the money back eventually. But the heater died, and so why wouldn't you replace it with electric only? The heat pump, there's a government actually scheme in New South Wales. We're like, well, hey, it's a it's a good deal. Why not do it? So I've done those things. I actually, my issue with EVs isn't actually EVs themselves. And you're right to call out both. As a financial advisor, I generally tell people just try and avoid buying new cars in whatever form or fashion they are. Just the depreciation of that. So I'm not anti-EV in the slightest.
Ride a bike. That's the best thing. Ride a bike, people. Don't buy a car. But I'm just saying, if you need to buy a new car, EVs are coming.
I think that mobile battery thing, I reckon that's the sleeper. I think people who understand it, if you can put 8,500 kilowatts in your garage as something you can suck back into the house, I mean, that is extraordinary. It
blows Tesla Powerwalls off the wall. Like it has about 15 times the capacity of a Tesla Powerwall, even more maybe. And I think
you get a free car with it. You buy the battery, you get a free car.
I was just about to say that, Scott, that I look at EVs buying the battery, and there is so many myths floating around about, what's going to happen? Like, a 10 years old, the battery doesn't work. That's absolute rubbish. There is a whole secondhand market at the moment. There's a Melbourne mob that are recycling old Nissan Leafs that have running around for 15, 20 years or whatever. Because they were the first one, or one of the first ones. So the battery tech, you can see the degradation. And they're recycling them, and they're making home batteries out of them. Okay? So people think that they dig up all these minerals and earth components, and it's going to go to waste. It's 10 years, then you got to throw it away. Absolute rubbish. These batteries will be valuable for a very, very long term. Think 30 plus years. People are going to want what's inside these batteries, or the battery itself, assuming that nothing goes wrong with it, for a very long time.
Mate, quick plug too for, I'll plug you in a minute, but for another podcast, I interviewed Scott Nargo, who is the Hyundai Australia government relations PR guy, talking not only about EVs, but also about hydrogen. And I think they are both super cool technology. So whichever way we end up with it, I imagine things get cheaper, they get more energy efficient, and frankly, more environmentally friendly, and probably not in that order are the other things we need to resolve, because I'm absolutely with you on the need to solve the energy crisis and the environmental damage as quickly as we possibly can. Hey, we've gone miles off track, but I've absolutely enjoyed this, Matt. How can our listeners get more from Matt and Aussie Firebug?
If you just Google Aussie Firebug, you'll see the blog. I'm on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcasts too. And I have a Facebook group, the Aussie Fire Discussion Facebook group. I think it's got 25,000 members at the moment. Oh. I'm in that a fair bit, a few times a week at least, at the very least. So at me, message me, I'll respond to you. And that's really about it.
Matt from Aussie Firebug, thank you for joining me for The Good Oil.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Scott. Thanks so much.
This podcast is hosted by me, Scott Phillips, produced by Ed Gooden, and imaged by Link Kelly.